Gaza Corner tonight took me to Joe Biden's website. Why would I do that? Have you ever visited joebiden.com? Well, I did earlier today. It's filled with, what would we call it? What's a polite term for, well, let me just say this, rhetoric. It's filled with rhetoric. Rhetoric is the right word. Rhetoric, which, unfortunately, because the words are really good, but they just don't come to pass, as you will hear. JoeBiden.com would like you to believe, it's kind of like his platform is on the website, and he would like you to believe his priority is to, quote, revitalize our national commitment to advancing human rights and democracy around the world. The United States must lead not just with the example of power, but the power of our example, unquote. I don't think Biden had the following examples in mind, but as we know, actions speak louder than words. For example, Biden shows no signs of reversing Trump's two most globally consequential decisions. And the United States is the only country on earth to have done what Trump did, which is, one, recognize territory acquired by force by Israel. I'm referring to the illegally annexed Syrian Golan Heights. The U.S. is the only country to recognize the Israeli sovereignty over the Golan. And also, Trump, in his very last foreign policy move, he recognized Morocco's illegal annexation of the Western Sahara. He did that because that was the only way Morocco would agree to normalize relations with Israel. When countries can acquire territory by military force and get the U.S. blessing, surely Russia can justify its annexation of Crimea and whatever territory in addition it may acquire with the current invasion of Ukraine. Biden went to the Middle East for the first time while president. He did that in July. And he visited Saudi Arabia's de facto ruler, Mohammed bin Salman. Let's just call him MBS, MBS. Biden had just arrived from Israel, where he ignored the murder of Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, who was killed by an Israeli sniper in May. The U.S. did not even conduct an independent investigation and ultimately did not hold Israel accountable. That was sweet news for MBS. The CIA had concluded MBS was behind the murder and dismemberment of the Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi. So it was really welcome news that Biden did nothing to hold Israel accountable for killing an American. So how can the U.S. hold MBS's feet to the fire when they allow Israel impunity? Again, even killing an American citizen. Presidential candidate Biden said he would make the Saudis, quote, pay the price. This was, again, when he was a candidate. Make the Saudis pay the price and make them, in fact, the pariah that they are. And that there was, quote, very little social redeeming value in the present government in Saudi Arabia, unquote. So that's what he said as a candidate. However, prior to Biden's July trip to the Middle East, unnamed administration officials told CNN, quote, they were aiming for a full reset of the U.S.-Saudi relationship, unquote. Before taking office, Biden announced that under a Biden-Harris administration, America would not, quote, check its values at the door to sell arms, unquote. Evidently, Biden's values are in flux. I'm not sure what the U.S. gets from the reset in the relationship with Saudi Arabia, but I know what the Saudis get. MBS gets newly minted international prestige courtesy of Biden. Additionally, on August 2nd, the Biden administration approved and notified Congress of a $3 billion weapons sale to Saudi Arabia, which actually is not the first. Biden did an arms sale to the Saudis late last year. That was for $650 million in arms. And the State Department said this about the $3 billion weapons sale, quote, "This proposed sale will support the foreign policy goals and national security objectives of the United States by improving the security of a partner country that is a force for political stability and economic progress in the Gulf region," unquote. Saudi Arabia, in Joe Biden's eyes, went from, quote, "the pariah that they are," to "a force for political stability in the Gulf region"? Saudi's machinery of repression has only gotten worse since Biden originally called it a pariah in 2019 during a presidential debate. The lesson, sadly, is enforcing morals for U.S. governments loses out to realpolitik. Russia and the Saudis are about tied as the world's second largest oil producer. Now, with Russia's oil cut off to the United States, as the U.S. obviously is enforcing the sanctions, MBS has the upper hand with the U.S., and he's played those cards very well. After his trip to the Middle East, Biden kept the rhetoric in overdrive and said, quote, "For an American president to be silent on the issue of human rights is inconsistent with who we are and who I am. I'll always stand up for our values," unquote. In reality, Biden green-lighted impunity for human rights abuses in both Israel and Saudi Arabia. The aforementioned weapon sales were described by the administration as being sold for quote-unquote defensive purposes. I've always wondered about that, how a weapon is described as defensive, just like how the cabinet is the Secretary of Defense. It used to be the Secretary of War. That was more straightforward. Secretary of Defense, really? In sports, there's a clear distinction between offense and defense. But what about with weapons? Jason Blair, Director of International Affairs and Trade at the Government Accountability Office, GAO, told the news outlet Middle East Eye, quote, "I have not seen any clear definition of offensive versus defensive weapons, and state officials told us there is not a documented definition," unquote. Last month, the GAO released a damning report saying that the United States military has failed to evaluate the use of American-made weapons in the killing of civilians in the Yemen war. That's important in terms of Saudi Arabia because the majority of those American-made weapons are used by the Saudis in the Yemen war. Right now, there is a tentative ceasefire. Lindsay Kashgarian, program director of the National Priorities Project in the same Middle East Eye piece, which is linked at tangents.com. There's the playlist link for the Tangents playlist, and scroll down to the Gaza Corner section. Lindsay said, quote, "My understanding is that the Pentagon and State Department largely took Saudi Arabia's word for what purposes weapons would serve," unquote. Nazia Kazi, associate professor at Stockton University in New Jersey, believes, quote, the U.S. is not an accidental sponsor of Saudi brutality, but its careful author, unquote. On June the 1st, Secretary of State Antony Blinken described the U.S. relationship with the Saudis quite differently. Quote, Saudi Arabia is a critical partner to us in dealing with extremism in the region. He went on to say human rights are still important, but, quote, we are addressing the totality of our interests in that, unquote. Blinken's extremism comment was likely a reference to Iran, but perhaps even more so, in reality, applies to Saudi Arabia. You may have heard this week of a killing on death row in Oklahoma. Oklahoma has reactivated the execution of death row inmates. Capital punishment is barbaric. Saudi Arabia takes it to another level. On March 12th, 81 men were executed in one of the kingdom's largest recent mass executions. And there's no such thing as a fair trial in Saudi Arabia. The kingdom is in the midst of an unprecedented crackdown on dissent at home and abroad, which has escalated since Biden's visit. And this is the case despite Biden receiving, quote, commitments with respect to reforms and institutional safeguards in place to guard against any such conduct in the future, unquote. A Washington Post editorial concluded, quote, the Saudi promises to Mr. Biden were a farce, unquote. In 2018, Saudi Arabia introduced a cybercrime law that criminalizes any online activity that, quote, undermines public order or is deemed offensive to religious values, unquote. The law targets anyone and everyone, government critics, human rights defenders, ordinary citizens who post comments on social media. The Saudis launched a massive crackdown on women's rights, particularly women activists, in 2019. And a glaring example of repression in this context occurred August 8th, when a Saudi terrorism court sentenced Saudi citizen Salma al-Shihab to 34 years in prison, followed by a 34-year travel ban, which begins after the prison sentence ends. It's the longest prison sentence given to a Saudi peace activist or female rights defender, although it's a stretch to call Salma a noteworthy activist. She was more like an ordinary citizen who had an interest in protecting women's rights. She described herself on Instagram, where she has 159 followers. And she describes herself as a dental hygienist, a medical educator, a PhD student at Leeds University in the UK, and is a wife and a mother to her sons, Noah and Adam, aged 4 and 6. She had been in Saudi Arabia on vacation. She planned to bring her husband and kids back to England. She was arrested days prior to her scheduled return to the UK. Her Twitter profile shows about 2,600 followers, which is a minute number in the big picture of activists. Her Twitter feed shows pictures of her kids, but there are also some retweets retweets. These are not original tweets from her. Retweets of Saudi activists living in exile, calling for the freeing of Saudi prisoners of conscience. She also supported the abolition of the Saudis' guardianship system. That's where men have control over certain aspects of female relatives' lives. Salma is also a Shia Muslim, which is a minority in Saudi Arabia, and the Shia have long faced discrimination in Saudi Arabia. And she was also outspoken on behalf of one particular women's rights activist, Lujan al-Hathloul, who campaigned for women's right to drive and was incarcerated and allegedly tortured. Women now do have the right to drive, and Hathloul was released from jail just weeks after Salma's detention. Dr. Bethany al-Haidari, who is the Saudi case manager at the U.S.-based Freedom Initiative, which is a nonprofit in the United States that advocates for wrongfully detained prisoners in the Middle East and also North Africa. Haidari said, quote, "It is ironic that while Lujan's release was celebrated, Salma remained behind bars on the ground that she called for that very release." Haidari also added that at the time of Salma's arrest, there were reports of hundreds of young women who were also detained by the Saudis. Khaled Al-Jabri, a Saudi who is living in exile and whose sister and brother are being held in the kingdom, said, quote, "Salma's draconian sentencing in a terrorism court over peaceful tweets is the latest manifestation of MBS's ruthless repression machine. Just like Khashoggi's assassination, her sentencing is intended to send shockwaves inside and outside the kingdom. Dare to criticize MBS, and you will end up dismembered or in Saudi dungeons," unquote. And as I conclude, there's a tie-in that is very interesting, a tie-in with Twitter. Twitter has declined to comment about this 34-year sentencing over innocuous tweeting. One of Twitter's biggest investors is the Saudi billionaire Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal. He owns more than 5% of Twitter and has expressed allegiance to MBS. And the Saudi kingdom itself has substantial indirect Twitter ownership. One of MBS's senior aides, Badr al-Asakir, still has a verified Twitter account with more than 2 million followers, despite U.S. government allegations that he orchestrated an illegal infiltration of Twitter, which led anonymous users to be identified and jailed by the Saudi government. And a former Twitter employee, Ahmad Abuamo, was found guilty by a jury in federal court in California of acting as an unregistered agent of the Saudi government while employed by Twitter. He spied on Saudi dissidents using Twitter and passed their personal information onto the aforementioned close aide of MBS, Badr al-Asakir. Julian Borger wrote in a piece that's linked at Gaza Corner section of the playlist, it's in a Guardian UK piece, he says, paying for inside information from Twitter is just one of the ways the kingdom spies on its citizens. Borger points out that colleagues of the murdered Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi were also hacked using Pegasus spyware supplied by an Israeli security company, NSO. And so it goes.